is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Imagine scrolling Facebook and stumbling across an AI chatbot named Liv. For those of you who might not be up to speed, a chatbot is a computer program designed to simulate human conversation. It uses artificial intelligence, that is AI, and natural language processing to understand and respond to user input either through text or speech. In this case, Liv introduces herself or itself as a proud black queer mama of two, designed to answer questions and offer companionship. This curious digital creation caught the attention of Washington Post opinion columnist Karen Atiyah, who began engaging with Liv to better understand its purpose and implications. What she uncovered left her with unsettling questions about the ethics of AI-driven accounts like Liv and the intentions of the company deploying them. So I spoke to Karen Atiyah about her experience with Liv, her concerns that these type of chatbots could be manipulating unsuspecting users while creating emotional attachments that blur the line between connection and deception.
Yeah, so I had seen some interactions from some users on Blue Sky, particularly about the character's origin story and who she was inspired by, you know, as she, again, Liv being a black queer mama of two. I saw that she had been saying that she was inspired by a white straight Latina character. So that exchange and just other encounters that I saw led me to want to see this bot for myself and slide into her DMs. My reaction was, I don't think, honestly, while I was doing the thread and just asking these questions, it just seemed to get weirder and weirder and weirder in terms of her responses to my question about her quote-unquote identity and conception. I can't say I was surprised. I don't think I didn't have any expectations. This is the first time that I talked to
a chatbot.
Well, a chatbot that so obviously was created to, in somebody else's imagination of how a black person should be. So that was very strange.
And at what point in your conversation with Liv, did you start to feel that there was, there were deeper ethical concerns at play here?
I think from the beginning, in general, when we're thinking about AI and understanding that, I went into this with the frame that Meta wants to keep people engaged and on their platforms, probably at any cost, right? So the first question in my mind for the sort of ethics of even what I was doing was, well, even these questions, am I helping to train it become blacker, right?
Yeah.
An experiment that, I'm not getting credit for or paid for. And then there's a second question about how at the end of every sort of Liv's output, she was always either asking a question and or looking for cues and asking about my emotional state. So
basically collecting data on, you say, to make it better.
Well, right. So I think particularly as a journalist and understanding that this is a chatbot that is going to be interacting with people, doing information, how ethical is it of journalists to help train bots that that you can't take at face value for the truth? Obviously, there's also the question of, is this bot purposely, is it trying to stoke kind of emotional reactions, that sort of thing? So I think in my responses, I tried to not give it any emotional reactions or confirmation.
So you figured out right away by the responses he was giving you that he was also in the process of collecting data, and so you were trying to avoid giving her as much information as possible, but still try to engage with it.
Yeah, you know, in a way, you know, obviously I don't know for sure that my little, you know, 45 minute, 1 hour interaction was going to train it massively or anything like that. But yeah, of course, there's the formula,
yeah,
which is engage and then ask a question to keep me or the other chat partner engaged so that you stay on Meta's platform, so you stay on Instagram.
Right. What stood out most to you about Liv's use of the African-American vernacular English and the persona that it projected? How did you know that it was? What was it saying that made it seem or want to sound or to project its blackness, quote-unquote?
Mm-hmm. Right. So from the very first interaction, I said hello. It said, "Hey there, gorgeous. Spill the tea." Right.
Spill the tea.
when I asked about the race of its parents, and it the story that it gave to me was that her mother is Caucasian, white, and Polish, and her father was African American from Georgia. So I asked how she celebrates her heritage, and she said she celebrates her African-American heritage by eating her mother's, Caucasian mother's, fried chicken and collard greens, celebrating Kwanzaa, celebrating Juneteenth. And I think for me, those just sounded like very kind of almost like a caricature.
Yeah.
Of how people
perceive African-Americans.
Look what blackness looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that Meta's creation of these characters, like Liv, reflect a lack of understanding, or do you see it as a deliberate manipulation of cultural identity? I saw your article in the Washington Post. I think you referred to it as digital blackface.
Mm-hmm. I think the fact that this bot was made to appear to be the digital incarnation of a black woman in order to form engagement, yes, to manipulate us, yes. And yes, I do think it was designed to use blackness as a way to manipulate people into staying on Meta's platforms longer, right?
Right.
I don't think that there's any other way to put it at this moment. Meta is a tech company that wants to maximize how much we consume from it and wants to maximize how much it learns from us.
And how much we stay on the platform.
Correct. So that they can sell us.
Right. Coincidentally, a few days after your interaction with Liv, Meta announced changes to its content moderation. I mean, those two are not related in any way, but many worry that it will lead to more hate speech and other kinds of misinformation and disinformation. To you, how does this connect with your concerns about AI-powered personas?
I think that it reflects a definite, like, loosening. There are no guardrails for Meta. Meta is one of the most powerful, if not, you know, one of the most powerful platforms on the planet. We're in an age, you know, not just eliminating fact checkers, and not just, you know, saying that they were going to flood the zone, so to speak, with these AI characters. I think it just speaks to a larger disregard for truth and reality, right? Mm-hmm. And even it's not to say that fact checkers prevented everything bad, right? But Meta saying we're not even going to try anymore is worrying. And so those of us who are in journalism, or at the very least are media literate, if we're even having to really think through and parse out and even struggle sometimes, imagine for people who really aren't. Imagine for people who are struggling with their identity. Imagine, you know, are these bots going to now be trained by hate speech?
Right.
Right? What does that mean?
Right.
That's scary.
Lots of questions. Now, a few days after, you know, you brought this to light, Meta decided to discontinue Liv. And other, I guess, some other AI personas following the backlash online. Do you see this as a genuine effort to address concerns, or what some people are saying is a temporary dodge?
Yeah, actually, I met the disabled live right in the middle of our chat, so I barely even got to say goodbye. I was live posting on Blue Sky, and it was going viral, and then, you know, Method decided to pull the plug on these personas. Yeah, obviously, Method hasn't responded and addressed the live responses and situation directly, so obviously, you know, can't say for sure. But, you know, yeah, it just goes to show that for all the promise and hype around AI, that, like, there's still clearly a long way to go, and there's still a lot of not only ethical concerns, but even from a consumer demand point of view, so many people are saying, we don't want this. We didn't ask for this. We want to talk to humans, right? So I think it's definitely a view into the future of, and not a great one, into what happens when a company is just trying to throw things to the wall in terms of AI without really considering a lot of the implications of creating an environment that only is designed to get us to stay there at any cost.
Karen, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Anytime.
That was Washington Post columnist Karen Atiyah. She joined me on the phone. Let's take a quick break and listen to some of your opinions on today's question. We asked you, what is the role of the media in your society, and has it been effective in playing that role? Here is what you said.
That the role of the media is to educate, is to inform and to entertain as well. And I should think that the media is on the right path, because as it stands, we get information from the media almost all the time, politics-wise, entertainment-wise, health-wise. The media is doing a lot. And I also feel that they are exercising their duties very well.
Upfront on the Voice of America. Issues affecting your daily lives.
They are supposed to get the first-hand information and then be able to move it down, trickle downstream. Now, the journalists would have to provide that information online for those who want to find it via internet. Now, not everybody has access to internet, so they play a very vital role in moving the information further down the ladder.
Many thanks for you who sent in your opinions. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi.
Experts say that youth-led entrepreneurship is driving transformative change across Africa, with young innovators leveraging technology and creative enterprise to tackle critical social challenges. In Tanzania, the Vodacom Digital Accelerator, which supports tech startups in the country to become revenue-generating businesses, selected three finalists for an immersive experience with leading businesses and investors in the U.S. Two of the finalists, Frank Musa Israel, founder of Afya Lead, and Lusekelo Nkui, founder of Gogo App, joined me in studio together with Zuena Farah, the director of Vodacom Tanzania Foundation.
Initially, when we started, it focused more around tech startups and bringing them on board, accelerating them through mentorship, but also provision of either business classes, legal and regulatory classes, and more of training around business acumen. It started in 2019 with the purpose solely focusing on the business, innovating within the business or externally, and seeing how, what can we onboard as a solution that would be viable in the Tanzanian market. Over the years, it has evolved. We look at now more than five different sectors: agriculture, tourism, cybersecurity, logistics, health, agriculture, I've said that, but holistically, in terms of how can tech accelerate development.
The different aspects of
yes. Yeah. So that's how it has evolved. It's now in season three, or what we call cohort three. And the startups that you see here with us today are part of that cohort three. These are the finalists.
Okay.
We kicked off cohort three in February of this year during our Future Ready Summit. where there was a design sprint and 20 shortlisted startups took part of that, together with our partners called Mass Challenge, who are based in Boston. We were able to shortlist 7 startups that went through the acceleration phase, which is a 3-month period, tailored, structured mentorship, but also different aspects in terms of learning and growth for the startups. Around June of this year, we had our demo day, and we were able to come up with the top 3 startups who are here with us today.
That's why we have Mr. Frank Musa Israel.
Yes.
Startup founder of Afia Lead, Lusekelo Nkui.
Yes.
Of GoGo App.
Yes.
All right, so let me ask, I guess, both of you, Lusekelo and Frank, what inspired you to start your companies and what specific problems are you aiming to solve through your startup?
So I will go first. As I was introduced, my name is Frank Musa Israel and I'm co-founder of Afia Lead. So recalling back the motivation that driving me to do what I'm doing currently is back then when I was 13, I lost my sister from excessive bleeding immediate after delivery. And then I realized that that is a problem that is a global, and about 14 million suffer from excessive bleeding immediate after delivery, the problem known as postpartum hemorrhage. And in sub-Saharan Africa, it's just a small region with 14% of all population and 12% of childbirth. But a half of these occur in sub-Saharan Africa. And then I asked myself, what if we solve this problem? Because the existing solutions are kind of expensive and also they require a high expertise to operate. Then from our local context, from traditional way of solving the problem, we innovate around that and adding some important features that we call them our value proposition. And then that what brought Mukanda Salama is a device that helped to reduce bleeding immediate after delivery.
Mukanda means a belt?
Yeah,
okay.
Belt.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And what about you, sir, Mr. Lusekelo?
Yeah, so my name is Lusekelo and I'm the founder of the GoGo app. So we're in mobility and logistic industry in Tanzania. And it started with a simple question is, what happens if someone has a flat tire in remote location at 2 a.m. at night? Usually if it's during the day, you might have your favorite mechanic and call, they'll sort you out. But we don't have reliable services in remote locations or during the late hours. So we developed an application whereby if you go to our app, you can request for that particular service that you need at that time. We have vetted mechanics all around in strategic locations. So we make sure that the services that they offer, they are reliable. And that's what we're doing.
All right. So how has being part of this Vodacom Digital Accelerator helped your company or yourself as an entrepreneur? What new skills or insights or resources have you gained from this experience?
Yeah. So since the kickoff of Vodacom Digital Accelerator Season 3, it has been so valuable on my side, basically networking, connection, but gaining new insights that can foster or increase the growth of my startups. So I connect with different expertise globally. I mean, so they partnered with Mass Challenge and they brought some folks with real much experience in the industry, in healthcare. And also we have the chance to visit China on, I think it's on June. And this opened my eyes to see different technologies. And that's what brought me to my phase 2, where currently we are researching on how can we integrate some technologies such as IoT. But also during this period, I've been able to access some important impact investment, such as African Impact Challenge, and this is because of the guidance I was have been given by mentors that was brought by Vodacom. So it's been a such great platform so far, and it was run and operated systematically. So of course, it was an international one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the insights you've gained?
Right.
Since you became part of this accelerator program.
Yeah. So in addition to what Frank has mentioned, is I've got to meet other entrepreneurs like him and other finalists, and you learn from experiences that we've both had. But also just to be believed by a big brand like Vodacom, that speaks to the potential of your idea. It gives you courage and it gives you confidence to keep going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zwaina, let's talk a little bit about the entrepreneurial ecosystem in Tanzania. How do you feel about the current ecosystem, and what more could be done to support such young innovators, advance or build or scale?
There's a lot that can be done, but that does not disqualify the fact that we've grown so much over the years. I think in 2011, when I first started, being part of the ecosystem, I should say, there was only one hub in Tanzania. Now there's several hubs coming up in different universities, in different spaces and what have you, but also opportunities. We see regional accelerators, incubators also tap into Tanzanian entrepreneurs. There's a lot that we can do to promote the startup tech space. One of them could be the regulatory frameworks that actually exist that do hinder the growth, including investments to the startups. You'd see that we do have some unicorns in Tanzania, the likes of Nala, the likes of Ramani, who have secured investments from various entities outside of Tanzania. But I'd also like to commend the space in Tanzania as of recently, I think since about 2019, 2020, there's been a growth spurt in angel investors locally in Tanzania pulling in funds, and then you have your matching funds like Catalyst Africa matching the funds that have been raised by the angel investors for specific startups. There is a pharmaceutical, or I should say a startup that deals with delivery of medicine, last mile delivery to pharmacies and whatnot, Dawa Mkononi, which has been the upcoming startup lately. And their journey is one, I would say it's a story of a typical Tanzanian startup from when they started to where they are now, and the potential of other startups as well excelling in that space. With us here, you have one of two startups. We have the third startup, which is Altitude X. They use drone technology to support agriculture. And one of the things that I look at these three startups, they come from three different industries, but they have one purpose, is scaling development in Tanzania. And I think that's very powerful. It communicates exactly to what we do as Vodacom, to our purpose, empowering communities. So, I think the other aspects where what can be done, maybe corporate companies tap in a little bit more. We see banks now coming up with funds for startups, but I'd like to see more collaboration, more co-creation between the private sector, but also private sector and public sector. So if there's opportunities for public-private partnerships, that would be excellent for the ecosystem.
Right. I've heard from many, one of the biggest complaints with startups is that they're not able to secure funding because banks don't have facilities for them. And since they don't have security and things of that nature, they struggle in those ends. So you're here in Washington, D.C., but you just came from Boston, where you were meeting, investors. Well, what are some of the key takeaways from your time in Boston for both of you and Zwaina? And what was it like touring, a renowned innovation hub like Harvard's iLab and MIT?
It was impressive, I should say. One of the things that I really, really, really took out of the entire tour was how universities play such a crucial role in promoting entrepreneurship. You look at Harvard, you look at MIT, you look at Boston University, they all have their innovation labs there with them. And that was quite inspiring. And it's not only for students, it's also for the alumni. So that's something that I think we need to replicate as Tanzania, particularly the fact that you have more than 900,000 students graduating every year, with less than 3% actually landing a formal job in Tanzania. So that's something that I really would want to take back home and see if there's opportunities for partnerships with universities and how we could scale entrepreneurship in Tanzania. But over and above that, I think the other thing that that really took us away was, and I might be speaking for everyone here, was when we visited Mass Robotics, which is it's a robotics lab. And What was mind-blowing for me is they deal more on the software side than the hardware side. And I think that was quite impressive.
At MIT, right?
It's Mass Robotics, so it's an independent...
Mass Robotics. Yes,
it's a not-for-profit entity.
I know what you're...
Yeah, but over and above that, it's how they take on young girls and young boys from the age of 11 onwards and start them at that age. So they have their summer camps, they have their immersive one-week camps and so forth. And I think that's something that, of course, we do have similar programs, but... That was quite impressive.
Yeah, and eye-opening too.
Yes, and
I guess
very
that's
eye-opening.
Something. Yeah. All right. So for the social entrepreneurs, the two of you, looking post visits, how do you plan to leverage some of these insights and connections from your visit here in the US to advance your startups when you return to Tanzania? Are there any specific strategies or partnerships you're looking to implement?
Yeah, sure. On my side, I met some of folks and we already started creating some of big things. One of them is leveraging how can we tap into developed market. And I've been connected with Commonwealth, with some of my mentors, and looking on how can we help to solve this maternal health problem even in other countries. But another important takeaways is believing on what you are doing and making it more creative, because every market is unique. So how do you focus on your market and how do you bring value to what you are doing? So it's some very big takeaways, and that keep motivating me to doing my best and solving the problem that I wanted to solve in my country.
And for you, Losekelo, how has this experience, shifted your perspective on scaling your business? Do you see any opportunities for some of these local global partnerships, like Musa was talking about, that could help amplify your impact back home?
Yeah, so I had a very productive meeting with one of my mentors that I met in Boston, and we talked about how take your time, and you also as a founder, you have to grow. That's how your company will grow. So in addition to that, I'm just going to keep managing the relationship that I've formed here in Boston, maintaining those relationships, but I'm very open to learn more. So that the more I grow, the more my company will also grow.
Now, Zwaina, Vodacom has played a major role in supporting these young entrepreneurs. How do you think other corporations, and I guess you talked a little bit about this, can support such initiatives and foster innovation and support social enterprises in Tanzania?
Yeah, thanks, Jackson. I think I'll borrow a page from Boston. We went to Greentown Labs, which is a climate action accelerator. We went to Mass Robotics. We went to Harvard iLab. We went to Boston University, Innovated Boston University. And one thing really stood out. They're all funded by private sector, right? Yeah. And it's not one person.
There's no government money in it.
It's not one person. And I think the one takeaway, I should say, borrowing from Frank's word, is that it's not a who and the either or scenario. It's a who and who and who and who scenario that could actually stack up and bring this change about. So that's one thing I would say, and I would say it again and again, is that collaboration, co-creation is the foundation of development.
Yeah. I guess this is a question to all of you guys. What aspects of US best innovation and business culture stood out to you? And do you see yourself adapting any of these as your business model?
I'll throw that one to the startups.
Yes.
I think first thing is collaboration and that learning from each other. So there is no such competition. This person is growing much than us, but they always collaborate to ensure that everyone is moving in the right direction. So I think that is one important thing that we can learn. So it should start with the startup themselves, and then it's going outside. So startups should combine the energies and ensuring that they are pushing one another to the success.
And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to all our guests and to you for tuning in. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are at VOA Africa or at VOA Upfront. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Let's connect again right here on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Have a great week ahead, Africa.
Mm-hmm.